CBS Out in the World. I'm John Batchelor with Barbara Weisberg. Her new book is Strong Passions, A Scandalous Divorce in Old New York. Edward's gone to war. Mary and Peter now mourn the death of their daughter. January 2nd, there's a notice in the newspapers that Elizabeth is gone. Mamie and Ellie are healthy, but Elizabeth is gone. In their grief, they console each other. And then, Barbara, Mary comes forward to Peter and tells him what?
She hurls herself at his feet and says, "You can't imagine how guilty I have been. For the last 18 months, I've been having an affair with Edward, your brother." And Peter is, of course, stunned, horrified, grief-stricken. A few weeks later, he meets with his father-in-law, the distinguished banker John Austin Stevens, who tells John Austin Stevens. John Austin Stevens doesn't believe it. He says, "You're making this up. You're just so heartsick about the death of your daughter. You've gone a little crazy." And Peter says, "Talk to Mary. She'll tell you the truth." And so John Austin Stevens meets with Mary. And as he later will say, Mary says to him, "It's true, Father, every word." Now, there's one more catch here, which is shortly after Mary confesses to Peter that she's been having an affair with Edward, she also tells Peter that she is pregnant. And whose baby is it? Unclear.
Edward's at war. Edward's in the aide to a general, the Burnside expedition. Edward then continues to volunteer for roles. We have Edward off scene. We're not going to get to him. He won't be home but much for an hour in these next years, and eventually will be alienated from his own family. So Edward becomes an idea. At the same time, Barbara and I were speaking, and I said, "Barbara, it came to me as I'm reading your book. I don't know how this is going to come out, but this is brother versus brother. This is the atmosphere of the war in two families who are at this point paralyzed with the revelations that have come to them, and society is not ready to hear it." Is that correct, Barbara?
Absolutely correct. It really is something of a metaphor for the war, or the war in microcosm. It is brother against brother. It is complete sense of betrayal as Peter, now totally distraught and enraged, moves toward divorcing Mary finally. And divorce among the upper class in New York, divorce is rare among anybody at this time, but among the upper classes in New York, it is absolutely taboo. You can't do it. You can secretly separate, you can make a private settlement, but you cannot go to court and divorce without absolute disdain from everyone you know in your social circle.
Right.
And it's hard to get divorced.
Very hard. Now, there's time here. From January of 62, the war is tearing the country apart. The grief is everywhere. People are in black all the time. The church services are filled with it. However, Peter and Mary are trying to find a way to continue to live under mother-in-law's roof, to raise their two healthy children, and to stay apart. And Peter goes along with this. John Austin Stevens goes along with this. Papa, Peter's father, is gone. So there's one senior figure in the combined family, two senior females and one senior male. And for 62, 63, 64, they carry on until they can't anymore. And that's when the lawyers enter. Now, Barbara teaches that divorce, she says it's hard. There are mitigations that are obvious all around you that would prevent the divorce from being granted. And Barbara, we see them all, connivance and collusion. In other words, did Peter permit this to happen in his house? See his brother carrying on with his wife. How could he miss it, you would ask? Also, forgiveness. Peter does forgive her in his way, and but he tries to find a way to live side by side with her. That, if proved in court, would end the divorce. Reconciliation. You could argue strangely they're not reconciled, but they're living on the third floor. Let's do the housing. There's a big bedroom with rosewood furniture. Where's Peter's room? Nearby?
Actually, Peter's room, yeah, is down the hall, wherever it is that they're living at the time, because they actually do have to move around. They eventually move out of Waverly. They rent another house. But wherever they are at this point, and they're still trying to put on the semblance of a marriage, they have separate bedrooms. Not far. They're, you know, maybe down a hall. But absolutely, they do not share a bedroom. And that becomes an issue down the line.
The courts begin November of 65. The war is over with, but the country is still burning. And all around them, they go into a courtroom, which Barbara presents as one of the premier courtrooms of Manhattan at the time, in the new new building. Is it Tweed's building that they're in, that the courtroom?
No, Tweed is at the time actually starting the new building, but they're still stuck in what was the old taxation building. And the newspapers would say that when people went to trial in that building, if it was tax time, the judges would be knocked down the stairs by people running around trying to pay their taxes. So they were in an old building, but the glorious new building was in process.
This is one of the joys of the book. The two law teams hired by the Stevens and Strongs are magnificent characters, all charismatic. Just to name, Barbara has great joy in quoting the testimony and the presentation by Henry Cram, the lead attorney for Peter, who's the plaintiff, and John McKean and John Graham are the defendant attorneys. They make these magnificent speeches. As I'm reading them, I keep getting convinced by them, and they're completely 180 degrees opposite. However, part of the allegation, and we're not going to give it away because you need to follow this story carefully, like a novel. Part of the allegation is that Peter's been alienated and he needs a divorce, but what triggers this is Mamie's living with Peter and Allie's living with Mary, and Peter wants them both. Is that his idea or is that his mother's idea? Where does that come from? Because he's disordering what looks to be equilibrium.
It comes from two play. It comes from Peter. Part of it is just he tries to forgive, God bless him, but he's enraged. And in America at the time, it's considered the father's patriarchal right to have his children. And the angrier Peter gets over the years at Mary for a whole slew of reasons, the more it strikes him that he should have control and custody of his children, not only because in his mind, Mary's in the wrong, she had an affair with his brother, but also because it's a father's patriarchal right. Fathers get custody of their children, not mothers. And he wants both daughters.
And good for John Austin Stevens and Austin Stevens, his son, because they won't give Mary up. They fight for her. Mary, in the meantime, has fled the country. What a surprise. taken Allie with her. Boy, is this tense now. All right, now, the witness list for the plaintiff. I thought I'd wandered into Canterbury Tales. Here comes the bishop wife. Here comes the chambermaid. Here comes the groom. Here comes the house, governess. They all have different points of view of the affair. And it spills out in a courtroom that also spills out in the national newspapers in New York and across the country. It ebbed and flowed, though, didn't it, Barbara, the attention to this? Because There's drama going on. They are impeaching. They are thinking of impeaching Andrew Johnson. That the first impeachment failed as well as all the other impeachments, but they are thinking about it. And reconstruction is underway. The Klan is rioting in the South. The army's occupying the South. All that's going on around them. And strong versus strong, did they cover it every day? How do the newspapers present it, Barbara?
It was covered every day. It's a 5-week trial, but the reporters' interest ebbed and flowed when there were long depositions that were read because people didn't show up. The reporters were bored. When there were actual witnesses on the stand telling their story, then the newspapers were really interested, and they would, everybody would show up and it would get columns on the front page. So it depended on how distracted they were by the major news going on in the country, but also who was testifying and whether it was live or the reading of a deposition, which seemed to have bored everybody.
Yes. Nobody knew that. The last witness is Robert Roosevelt, who is related directly to Theodore Roosevelt, who's 7 years old at the time. Robert Roosevelt is 36 years old and a cousin who it becomes important in terms of conservation. And Barbara reasons quite convincingly that this is the predicate for Theodore Roosevelt's fascination with national parks and with preserving the wildlife out of this trial. But we're not going to tell you the end, are we, Barbara? No, because it's unguessable. We're going to go to someone who learned a deal, we believe, from these events and became world famous, still is, the novelist Edith Wharton. The book is Strong Passions, A Scandalous Divorce in Old New York. Barbara Weisberg is the author. This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.